Right now, I'm joined on the phone by Tom Hansen. He's the director of the Mexico Solidarity Network, which is a binational organization with offices in Chicago, Washington, D.C., Chiapas, and Ciudad Juarez. Hello, Tom. Are you there?
Hi. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining me today.
Sure.
Could you start off just by letting us know about some of the work of the Mexico Solidarity Network and also how people can check out your website and what they'll find there?
Sure. We do a lot of work in solidarity with the Zapatista movement. We have an alternative economy program, an educational program. We also do a lot of work with expreseros that are organized in central Mexico, maquiladora workers, and barrio organizations in northern Mexico along the border. A lot of work with undocumented workers here in the United States. In fact, in Chicago right now, the first case of sanctuary, an undocumented worker who was about to be ordered to be removed from the United States and has taken sanctuary in a local church here in Chicago. We're working very closely with that struggle. We also publish a weekly news summary on Mexican and Mexican immigrant events, which is available on our website at mexicosolidarity.org.
Great. And I understand you've written a number of articles about the Mexican elections, which is what we're going to be talking with you about today. Maybe we could just start off. I understand there was quite a struggle there, and maybe a continuing one, to get a full recount of the votes in that election. Is there any chance that's going to happen? I understand there was a partial recount. What was the result of that, and is there any chance of a full one?
I don't think there's much of a chance of a full recount at this point. And I think what this has shown is that the institutions in Mexico, the federal institutions in charge of elections in Mexico, are incapable of carrying out a clean election. If one candidate wins by an overwhelming number, say 5 million or 6 million votes, they can more or less get it right. In a close election, they've proven themselves to be incapable. And I don't think, and many people share this opinion, that although there are about 42 million votes that were cast in the last presidential election, I don't think that there is any federal institution that is capable of actually honestly counting those votes at this point.
And why is that?
In part, it's the way that the IFE, the Federal Electoral Institute, is structured. There are 9 members in the IFE. 4 of them were appointed by the PAN, which is the party that President Fox is part of, and 5 of them were appointed by the PRI, but by a particular segment of the PRI, a segment headed by perhaps the second most corrupt politician in all of Mexico, Elbester Gordillo, who's the head of the teachers union in Mexico. At the point that in 2003, when the members of the Federal Electoral Institute were named, she was the head of the PRI congressional branch, and she named 5 of the members, the PAN named the other 4, and they left López Obrador and the PRD completely out of the equation. And it's turned out that that Gordillo is really not much of a priista either. She's actually been kicked out of the PRI. During the election campaign, she started her own party in order to draw votes away from the official pre-candidate, and she's very close to President Fox. And as a result, the PAN, the National Action Party, in effect has a lock, 9 members in the Federal Electoral Institute. This is an institute that was initiated in the 1980s to try and bring clean elections to Mexico. As far as federal institutions, up until this election, it enjoyed a good deal of confidence amongst the general public. Something like 80-85% of the general public in polls found that the IFE was, of the federal institutions in the federal government, was the most, they had the most confidence in the IFE. And as a result of this whole election process, over the past, say, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, the confidence of the general populace in the IFE has shrunk from about 80 or 85% to about 35%. So they've basically burned themselves completely.
And can you run down, for folks who may not be totally familiar with this, some of the problems that happened in the election, as there was so many very varied problems that occurred, some quite deliberate disruptions of the process. Can you talk about what went wrong in the election?
Sure. During the campaign, the official campaign season in Mexico starts in January, and it's supposed to be 6 months long. Although this heavily contested election, I think you could probably say the campaign's been going on for the past 2 years. But in campaigning in Mexican elections, the president, the sitting president, is very strictly prohibited by law from participating in any campaigning. It's very much unlike the U.S. elections. And this has to do with the history of corruption in Mexico, political corruption. And so the president is very strictly prohibited from participating, from favoring one candidate or another, from participating in any direct way in the campaigning. And President Fox violated this law over and over and over again. I mean, he essentially mounted a six-month campaign in favor of Felipe Calderón. Under normal circumstances, with a federal electoral institute that was independent and that was functioning under the law, this would have probably been sufficient for the PAN, the National Action Party, to lose its federal registry. But rather than that happening, basically the IFE looked the other way and allowed the president to violate the law literally every day for 6 months. The federal government used social programs, in particular one called Oportunidades, which provides small stipends to about 5 million single mothers in Mexico. These are really the poorest of the poor in Mexico. These are single mothers who really don't have any other options other than money from Oportunidades. And in exit polls, it was shown that over 40% of the people, the mothers who received Oportunidades, voted for Felipe Calderón, the National Action Party candidate. Now, Calderón, the National Action Party, is a big business party. It's a party of the rich. These Oportunidades mothers have very little ideologically in common with the National Action Party. But at the local level, people who run the Oportunidades program said that if they didn't vote for Felipe Calderón, they would lose their benefits. This happened over and over again, not just in Oportunidades, but in just about every federal program administered by the federal government. People were threatened with a loss of their benefits if they didn't vote for Felipe Calderón. So the election was stacked to begin with. Another example. Leading up to the election, about 2 months before the election, in fact, PRI, PAN coalition in Congress, passed a new law which essentially gave the two television monopolies in Mexico, TV Azteca and Televisa, monopoly control over the new digital broadcasting techniques that are being introduced in Mexico over the next couple of years. This is the same thing that in the United States, where when these licenses were awarded, they were awarded by auction. But in this case, they were awarded to Televisa and TV Azteca by government fiat. And it's pretty well understood in Mexico that this was done in exchange for Television Azteca or TV Azteca and Televisa basically supporting the PAN candidate, the PAN candidate, Felipe Calderón. And we saw this for months and months. I mean, the nightly news was basically a campaign commercial for Felipe Calderón, you know, over and over and over again. And I mean, it was to the point where it would be like ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox News, all supporting one particular presidential candidate in the most obvious ways on nightly news programs and every other program that they run during the day. And so the deck was pretty well stacked, and despite that fact, López Obrador, the PRD candidate, went into the election ahead in the polls by anywhere from 2 to 5 points. And this is one of the reasons that López Obrador, despite all of the fraud during the election campaign, López Obrador is claiming that the voting in and of itself was also fraudulent. And there's strong evidence that this was the case. The PRD has challenged about almost 50,000 of the voting booths out of a total of about 130,000 voting booths. The Federal Electoral Tribunal, which is the highest institutional body that oversees the elections and that officially declares winners and losers, agreed to recount 9% rather than some 35 or 40% of the voting booths. And that recount procedure has just been completed, and we're expecting some kind of an announcement tomorrow and then a formal announcement of the winner on September 6th, if they can, in fact, announce a winner. But even the voting during the counting of voting was extremely fraudulent. I talked to two people who cast ballots in Mexico City. And even in Mexico City, where the PRD is relatively strong, the party is divided. Not all the members of the PRD supported López Obrador. And there were several examples of local election watch officials, and each party has the right to send an official to each voting booth. And the PRD local officials were very carefully guarding the ballot boxes for Congress and for the Senate, and basically ignored the presidential election ballot boxes. And so we saw thousands of cases where there were more senatorial and congressional ballots cast than presidential ballots. Now, this is very unusual. I mean, this is completely out of the ordinary. Only about two-thirds of the polling places in all of Mexico were even covered by PRD activists. So pretty much, you know, at a third of the polling places, it was pretty much left open to the PAN to carry out whatever kind of fraud they wanted to carry out.
So following the election, folks who, supporters of López Obrador and Obrador himself, protested in the streets. There was a call for a full recount, and there was a lot of publicity, at least here in the alternative media. I don't know how it was in Mexico or in the mainstream press here, but in the alternative media, at least, there was a lot of discussion about some of the serious fraud that had taken place in that election. And what was the result of the outcry? Is it just been this partial recount of 9% of the votes that you say tomorrow we'll hear the results? Has that been the only thing that's come out of this enormous response to the fraud in the election in Mexico?
Well, institutionally, yes. But it's not clear that the institutions are going to be able to control the political dynamics here. López Obrador called for demonstrations the week after the elections and drew almost 1 million people to the center of Mexico City on about 5 days' notice. 2 weeks later, he drew perhaps 1.2 or 1.3 million people. His supporters, and not only his supporters, but people who are upset about the fraudulent process of the elections, even people who maybe necessarily didn't support López Obrador or don't think he's the best candidate, but people who are upset about the fraud have been, for example, closing down the International Bridge at Ciudad Juarez, closing down banks in Monterrey, and both of these cities are PAN strongholds. In Mexico City, where the PRD controls basically the entire city assembly and the mayoralty, the center of the city has been closed down for a month now. There's a permanent, what they call plantón or sit-in, in the center of the city. The business district has been closed down. There are spontaneous demonstrations all over the city, closing down banks, closing down large corporations that have supported the PAN. And this is going on not just in Mexico City, but all over the country, although to a lesser extent in other parts of the country. López Obrador has called for what he's calling a National Democratic Convention in the center of Mexico City on September 16th. And whatever the announcement on September 6th by the Federal Electoral Tribunal, if they announce as expected that Calderón is the president-elect, it's hard to say what's going to happen at this National Democratic Convention. The Democratic Convention may very well announce that López Obrador is the president. And as López Obrador said the other day in an interview with Le Monde in France, on September 16th, Mexico may have two presidents and not just one. Institutionally, probably Calderón will be named president. But as far as popular democracy goes, and as far as legitimacy, he will have very little legitimacy. And I don't think the people of Mexico are going to allow him to take over the presidency like this in a sort of a coup d'état.
If the winner of the election hasn't even been announced yet, then how could Felipe Calderon, the conservative candidate, claim victory over Lopez Obrador?
Well, he's been doing that ever since the first day when the Federal Electoral Institute basically managed the vote count. And the Federal Electoral Institute also, which doesn't have the legal right to declare a victor, declared Calderon the victor. President Fox, just this week, on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, he doesn't have the legal right to declare a victor. He declared Felipe Calderon the victor. Felipe Calderon has declared himself the victor ever since the election night.
Has the media also declared him the victor, generally speaking? Most of the media, has that happened?
No, a good deal of the media has been saying, you know, respect the legal process, wait until the Federal Electoral Tribunal makes its announcement. Although certainly tacitly there has been, in much of the mainstream media, in particular Televisa and TV Azteca, there's been a tacit acceptance of Calderon as president. But Mexico is unlike the United States. They have, for example, several national newspapers and magazines that are left-leaning. La Jornada, El Proceso. There are a number of regional radio stations that are left-leaning. And so the debate is furious in Mexico, and it's being carried out both in the media, in intellectual circles, and as well as in the street.
You said that is it September 16th that they're going to announce a winner?
On September 6th, the Federal Electoral Tribunal will either announce a winner or announce that these elections need to be done over because there's no way to announce a winner.
So that's what you meant when you said if they can announce a winner.
Right.
What do you think the likely outcome will be of that? Do you have any idea?
Every indication so far is that the Electoral Tribunal is going to announce Calderon as the winner. But you never know. I mean, there's a sense of ingovernability right now in Mexico City. And if they announce a president who doesn't have legitimacy, who doesn't have political legitimacy, the Mexican people may very well not put up with that. I mean, there's a lot riding on this right now.
It seems, though, that this very similar thing has happened in the past, and although there was some resistance to it, eventually people gave up. I mean...
Well, I think that was a big difference between... you're probably referring to Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas, who won the presidential election by most counts in 1988, but he was ahead in the computer count. The computers mysteriously went down. 3 days later, the computers went back up, and the pre-candidate, Carlos Salinas, was ahead. Everybody in Mexico understands that Carlos Salinas lost that election, and Cárdenas won that election. But Cárdenas was a very careful, institutionally-oriented politician. He was a former member of the PRI. He didn't call for street demonstrations. In fact, he called people ready to go to the street, and he told people not to go to the street. I think López Obrador has approached this whole situation from a very different perspective. López Obrador cut his political teeth as an activist, and although he was a member of the PRI for some time, he was first and foremost an activist. And so he's managing this situation very different than 1988.
If there was so much fraud that happened in the election that was just so much of it irrefutable, how can the government not have a full recount, and how can they possibly announce Calderon the winner on September 6th? How could they do that?
Well, I guess we could ask the same question about the last U.S. election and what happened in Florida. How can we accept that the Supreme Court stopped a recount and announced that George Bush was president? How can they do it? They do it because they control institutional power, and they think they can get away with it.
And you're saying you don't believe that they will in Mexico this time around?
No, I think that the demonstrations have gone too far now. I think that there are too many people that are committed to this. I think that the people are frankly upset, pissed off at what's going on. And I think that if they try to impose Calderon as president, they're going to have an illegitimate president for the next 6 years. And they're certainly going to have some serious street demonstrations and some serious social problems for the foreseeable future.
Well, Any final thoughts today, Tom, on the situation there?
It's interesting, you know, that we're very close to the Zapatista movement and the other campaign in Mexico, and the other campaign didn't participate in the elections. And specifically because the other campaign talks about elections as being a depoliticizing event, that people, the only way for people to participate in institutional politics is to cast their vote once every 2 years or 3 years or 6 years or however often elections happen. And then the political parties and the politicians take over the political process and dominate it. And the other campaign and the Zapatistas have been calling for a different kind of political process in which people take direct control. People become politicized. People take direct control of the political process. They don't allow decision making to be carried out behind doors by corrupt politicians. But the Zapatistas and the other campaign are calling for direct democracy. And I don't think there's any better example of how elections don't work than this particular example.
How can people learn more about the Mexico Solidarity Network and about read about the elections there, as well as other information on your
We
site, about your work?
publish weekly updates and have a lot of analysis on the elections and a lot of other things that are going on in Mexico at our website, which is www.mexicosolidarity.org.
And just one final question. Why should listeners and folks here be interested? Why should they care? Why should they take action on this issue?
Well, I think people should be interested because, in a sense, the elections in Mexico were the elections in the United States. It was a different set of electoral fraud in the United States. It was a different institutional process. People responded in a very different way, and I think we can learn a lot from the way that people in Mexico have responded to this. I mean, if we're willing to basically give up on our extremely limited democracy that we have through these institutional electoral processes, we're willing to give up on those and let a president like George Bush then assume the presidency and start a war in Iraq. And I mean, I don't need to go down the list of all the things that George Bush has done. Then we're, as a country, we've basically abandoned politics to the elites, to the wealthy, to the corrupt politicians and the political parties. And I think the lesson in Mexico is that we shouldn't do that. We can't do that, and there's a way not to do that. And that way is to make sure that the people's will is heard.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Tom. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Again, that was Tom Hansen. He is the director of the Mexico Solidarity Network. You can check out their website at mexicosolidarity.org. They're a binational organization with offices in Chicago, Washington, D.C., Chiapas, and Ciudad Juarez. Among many other things, they work a lot with undocumented workers here in the U.S., and they've done a lot of work with the Zapatistas. They do a lot more than that. Check them out at mexicosolidarity.org. And stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM.